WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, Earl Stanley Gardner, and John D. MacDonald got their start writing detective stories for cheap, popular magazines known as pulps. These magazines, with such titles as Black Mask, Dime Detective, and Thrilling Detective, flourished in the 20s and 30s before dying out by the mid-50s. Ron Gallard's new book, The Dime Detectives, is a history of these pulps. Gallard is a prolific writer of mysteries and science fiction. He also spent many years working in advertising. Perhaps you remember his newspaper parody that appeared on Rice and Wheat Chex boxes in the 60s. Ron Gallard told me how the pulps got their name.
Basically, from the kind of cheap paper they're printed on, it's called wood pulp or pulpwood paper, and they used to be called, you know, pulpwood magazines, and eventually they just shortened it to pulps. And in the heyday of the magazines in the 20s and 30s, of course, the opposite of the pulps was the slicks, like the Saturday Evening Post and Collars, which paid the big money.
The slicks would be the equivalent of the glossies.
Glossy now, yeah.
Did hard-boiled detective fiction start in the pulps?
Pretty much, yeah, in the 1920s. After the First World War, there was that kind of cynical, jaded kind of thing that spread across the whole of the United States and probably the whole world. People were disillusioned, and they sort of, in a way, acted a lot tougher maybe than they were. So you get that blending of acting tough and really being sentimental underneath it. And also there was a great deal of interest in the American language at that time and slang. You had people like Ring Lardner and Mencken writing about slang and Lardner writing in vernacular and so forth.
You say that Black Mask, one of the pulp magazines, changed the mystery field for good. How?
Well, Black Mask was the one, halfway by chance, in a way, that introduced writers like, particularly Dashiell Hammett and later Raymond Chandler, and they started writing in a different way, and that was they started writing about the mean streets and the gangsters and the drifters and the private detectives who really worked, you know, on crimes that were sort of tabloid newspaper crimes as opposed to crimes where people worked out ingenious ways of murdering somebody with poison. These were people who shot people in an alley. And this kind of thing began to get into Black Mask. And by the 1930s, it pretty much had taken over a great many of the magazines because people related to it.
Well, this magazine, Black Mask, was co-founded by H.L. Mencken and by theater critic George Nathan.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
Well, Mencken, as he says, and as I quote, he was looking to make some money. He wasn't doing that well. Now, Mencken had started a magazine called Smart Set, and that was the one they hoped to make the money on. And I guess they needed some more financing, so they decided that the best thing they could sell would be a book of detective stories, a monthly magazine. And it was quite successful for them, even before it turned to a hard-boiled magazine when it was just giving the same old kind of very polite detective stories.
You reprint an example of some of the very stiff early writing that appeared in Black Mask magazine. Can I ask you to read an example of that?
Yeah, all right. Now I got to make sure here I'm not reading my own stuff when we want stiff writing here. Oh, no, here it is. When Mr. George Mitchell propped the news against the sugar bowl and dug into his matutinal grapefruit, he was unused to interruptions by persons answering classified advertisements. But on this particular morning, the maid casually remarked that there was someone at the door inquiring for a position as chauffeur. That's got a lot of things in it. It very obviously upper class, long sentences with semicolons, and also people who are hiring chauffeurs and have maids and so forth. This was the kind of thing that a great many... What is still one of the major categories of detective stories, particularly in England, which is the country house kind of thing, where everybody has servants and it's an all very upper class kind of thing. Hammett and Chandler and Carol John Daly and people like that began writing about different kinds of crimes, you know, more urban, big town American kind of crimes, and those involved, as I said, shooting and robbery and hijacking and all kinds of things like that.
Why did the pulps start dying out?
People give different dates on that. It started after the Second World War in 1945, 46. They began to dwindle, and by the middle 1950s, almost all of them were gone. And the reasons for that were the encroachment of two things, the paperback novel and the television, which ate up almost everybody's leisure time.
Were there still pulps around when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I never sold to a pulp magazine, but somewhere in one of my trunks I do have several rejection slips. But I was trying to sell to science fiction pulps. I never sent to a detective pulp.
Why not?
I wanted to be exclusively a sci-fi writer in those days. And it wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I started sending out detective stories and branched out.
What did you read when you were growing up?
Everything that I could find, anything that was printed, you know, even the labels on the soup cans or something. I just liked to read. And I read comic books first. And in my drugstore, everything was graded, you know, for your age. Way down toward the floor were the comics, and then above them were the pulps, and then above them eventually were the paperbacks. So you just kind of worked your way up, you know. So I started with, I read every comic book that came out from about 1938 onward, and then I got into science fiction pulps. There was Planet Stories and Thrilling Wonder Stories. I mean, you couldn't resist a title like that, Startling Stories. And I began to discover people like Ray Bradbury and John D. McDonald, and I thought they were terrific. And that kind of really pulled me into the science fiction field for a long time.
In some ways, I think of you as being an old-fashioned writer, and by that I mean...
Yes, sure.
Yeah, you write everything. You write science fiction, you write detective novels. You've written under many, many pseudonyms. You've written novelizations of films, including Cleopatra Jones. You've written novelizations of comic strips, including Vampirella. Novelizations of TV shows, including Laverne and Shirley.
Yes, that was
you've
a classic.
You've written romance novels?
Yes.
As well? You like working in all these different forms, is this the best way to make a living?
What I define myself as sort of a Renaissance hack. I mean, in other words, this is what I do for a living, you know. I'm not one of these guys, you know, who has a job or something. So if somebody, it's not so bad now. It used to be years ago. I mean, having lunch with an editor, and she had bought, let's say, two of my science fiction novels, and then all of a sudden her company decided to kill science fiction at that particular house for a couple of years. And I'd say, well, what the hell else can I do? And she said, have you ever written a Regency romance? I said, what is it, you know? And she said, well, it takes place, you know, in England and during the Regency, and I had to find out what that was. And so I wrote a couple of them and sold them to her. So, yeah, sometimes it's expediency that makes one, do more than one kind of genre.
How come you don't write all these genre books under your own name?
I would, because my ego is such that I'd say I'd love it, but somebody pointed out to me once, if you see 14 books by somebody in the same year, you begin to think maybe the guy's, you know, stretching himself too far.
And aren't you, though, or are you?
This is a double-edged question because, I have slowed down. I only do at most 6 books a year now, so it's, but it's not the writing that's the difficult part, it's the plotting of the book. Once you got the structure, I can write a book, I shouldn't tell my editors this, I can write a book in a month or 6 weeks. If you do 10 pages a day, you can theoretically write a small book in 20 days, or 3 weeks, and that gives you a day off, see?
Now, some of the pseudonyms that you've written under are called house pseudonym. Why don't you explain what a house pseudonym is?
Well, that goes back to the pulps or before. I guess it goes back to the dime novels where, you know, they had a series and they wanted, let's say, 12 books or 24 books a year about this character, and they thought no one human being could do that. So instead of driving Bert L. Standish or whoever to death, they got 3 guys, or like Nick Carter, they got 3 people or 10 people to be Nick Carter, and that's how they got the material. So I've done 2 or 3 things like that where there was a series established at a paperback house, and they wanted, particularly with the Westerns, they were doing at one point 24 of them a year, and they didn't think the guy that created it could do it, so they brought in 2 other writers. And we were, that was Zeke Masters was the pen name. And we were going to start a club once called the Zeke Masters Writers of America. And, you know, like we had 5 of us that were Zeke Masters and so forth. But mostly it's their wish. In other words, they want everybody to think that Kenneth Robeson or Zeke Masters or whoever, Chad Calhoun, I think was one of them, that there's only one person doing that. That I must tell you, this guy, as you may already know, this goes on at very high levels. I mean, there are many, many, or some anyway, major books by writers who have nothing to do with them. They just put their name on them, you know. But that's another whole topic.
So what are you working on now? What books?
I'm supposed to be right this minute working on a mystery novel for St. Martin's. It's called The Tijuana Bible. And it's about people looking for $1 million worth of rare comic books. And that's due in a few weeks, and I hope to God that I'll be able to finish it. I'm behind on that. I'm also editing something which will be called the Encyclopedia of American Comics, which will cover comic books and comic strips in America.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Well, thank you for talking with me.
Ron Gilart's new book, The Dime Detectives, is published by Mysterious Press. This is Fresh Air.